listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast, with me, Kate Rhodes.
And me, Maysoon Wazwaz.
Maysoon, this week we got a little bit, actually this was a couple weeks ago, we got some listener feedback that I went out into the field, into the Berkeley Hills with my recorder and
literally
went
the field.
Straight to the listener and got the feedback. So let's have a listen.
Okay, I'm here on site with Kate Dodd, listener, and wanted to get straight from the source some listener feedback. This may be the farthest I've ever gone for listener feedback. You got any feedback for us?
One thing I would love is to find out more and more and more about things that happen in non-commercial spaces or spaces that have public-private ownership or that are pop-up or something like that, because I do site-specific art and I very much want to know kind of where are those nooks and crannies that things are happening that I can go see.
I feel like we talk a lot about alternative venues, and it's actually lucky we got this question this week because we have an interview with Margaret Tedesco, who's running a alternative venue over here in the Mission in San Francisco.
Second Floor Projects. Yep.
We're up here at Second Floor Projects talking to artist, curator, editor, writer, publisher. What, anything else?
No, I think that's it. I had a history to be, you know, I was a dancer.
You didn't
I was a choreographer.
Margaret Tedesco.
Thank you for having me on your show that I listen to religiously in the middle of the night.
Ooh.
Yeah, I actually do. I turn it on sometimes when I awake at 2 in the morning and lay in bed and listen to you two.
So we're not necessarily lulling you to sleep.
No, not at all. You've gotten me agitated and sitting upright, coming out of dreams.
Oh.
This might not be the best question to start with, but just from my own current curiosity, where do dreams come from?
I'm more of the school that they are. They are the other world that we need to listen to probably more than the daily. I don't think it's just accumulation of the daily. I think it's what's in the soma. Dreams are very important.
I forget where, but I know there are other cultures that take those, and that's how they make their decisions for the day.
I get a lot of information in my dreams that lead me to many of the things that happen here at Second Floor Projects. You could probably ask a few artists that I've worked with, like the names of the shows have come to me out of dreams, and people to put together, things like that. Yeah, just come to me. I grew up having a lot of unusual things happen with the other world, the spirit world.
Uh-huh.
I had a lot of visitors.
Oh.
Mm, yeah. So I think about that a lot. I trust it.
I'm really glad I asked you that question.
I want to hear a story of a visitor. I don't think I've had any visitors. I'm not as like accepting and open maybe to that other world.
I don't want to be fearful of it, even though it can be, you know, it can be an uncomfortable thing, but I don't want to be fearful of it. I mean, when I was a younger person, of course, I was more fearful. I wasn't sure what was really happening, but a couple of times some things happened to myself and my sister in the same night, and so I had to trust that we were not making it up and we were both not on drugs.
And they were related.
Yeah.
But you weren't in the same room or...
No, we were in the same room, and it happened at different hours of the same night, middle of the night. Strange things, yeah. Yeah. Well, I grew up Italian, you know. We... All of that stuff around the Catholic Church, you know,
yeah.
It mesmerized me. I was fascinated with it all of it. I wanted to hang out in churches after school, not for... to pray as much as I wanted to experience somebody talking to me, like telling me something.
Yeah.
Are you still Catholic?
No. I actually gave up the formality of it when I was 14. I remember vividly in middle school, which we, Catholic school, we continued, you know, like from second or first grade all the way to eighth grade. So that was, our middle school was incorporated. And I remember vividly a priest coming in and talking to us about going to high school the following year and that we should be very aware of drugs that were out there. And I told myself, I'm not sure where I'm going to go with this exactly. And certainly when I went to public high school, and of course within 4 months of the ninth grade, I think I had taken first LSD tab.
Damn, that's pretty quick.
Yeah. And then I thought, I can't be Catholic anymore. There's so many things I want to see and do that are not. I mean, I was already trying them out in grade school, too. I was notorious for going up to the altar in grade school, going behind the gate where the priest said you couldn't touch the altar because, you know, priest's fingers are consecrated. And I would take a little band of children with me into the church after school and walk up there proudly and touch the entire altar and say, I'm still standing here. See? I am still standing here. They will tell us these things will happen, but I don't know if they really will. So I had all this, you know.
That's badass, corrupting the youth.
Daredevil and rebel. Yep, definitely. I wonder if there's a lot of artists who are ex-Catholics.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure. Right? Yeah, yeah.
Very creative religion.
It is. No, it is. And all of the mysticism, or the, it's not really mysticism, the pageantry is really what gets you off as a kid, you know. You're like, you go in the church, and especially around the resurrection, Easter is phenomenal. I mean, the statues are covered first in this purple cloak, and then there's all that wonderful smell, yeah, and all the clanging, and processions up and down, and, you know, and going through genuflection, oh my God.
What's that?
It's where you have to kneel down on one knee when you enter a church to pay your respects, and also when you sign yourself with the holy water. I always thought holy water was amazing. I wanted to, like, get a lot of it. Yeah.
It's fucking awesome.
Stuff. I love all that stuff.
Do you ever go to church here just for fun?
No.
No, never.
No, I mean, you know, when you're traveling in Europe, I love to go into cathedrals. And I like, High Mass is beautiful, really gorgeous, because it's in Latin. Yeah. If you go to one at a certain hour of the night, like on a holiday. Yeah.
So you've been running Second Floor Project since 2007?
Almost 10 years.
Well,
can you believe it?
It's the beginning of my ninth year. Who knew?
Awesome.
Seriously, who knew? I had no clue, and it's been really amazing. In the whole 8 years, I think I've had one diva artist. One. That's pretty good.
And how do you define diva artist?
An artist that really caused a lot of ruckus around nothing. And it was really uncomfortable and unfortunate. It was unfortunate because it was a little, it was pretty much because their ego was too invested in the situation that they were fighting for, and they didn't need to fight for it. At least that's how I looked at it. It's been great. It's been great.
Every other artist was like, not a douchebag?
Yeah, exactly. Can you believe it? Can you?
No.
It's been, I've had very wonderful experiences. And like I said, I think it's like trusting, you know, I have a curatorial approach to everything, but I also have lived here a long time, like since 1988. And I've worked at the San Francisco Art Institute for almost 20 years. 13 off campus as a freelancer and 7 on campus. And so my relationship to being right there all the time with the artworks and the development of friendships and, you know, conversations and dialogues and mentoring and all of those things,
Here they come. We're here during an active time for the gallery, where they're actually open right now, so that could be someone coming to view the show. Do you still work for SFAI?
No longer. I stopped in 2010.
And you were primarily doing design work with them?
Design. I have taught classes. I did the directed study, whatever they call those units, right. You know, with both schools. And, I worked there for quite some time. I did 14 years of MFA catalogs. Like, more than know people's faces sometimes. I remember the artwork that went on the page, because every year I met with 100 students before graduation to come in and sit with me at my computer and go over their page with me, because I ended up either cropping or removing outlets, yeah, unless scale was what needed to be addressed in the piece. I did a lot of cleaning of their images. I made some people's work better. I know, it's like the community just rolls off my head, people's work, how they make work, what they do, who they interact with, you know. So it, all of this came through, you know, second floor, all of the artists. Of course, the first initial artists were, a lot of them were SFAI. I had a lot of CCA students, and then eventually people from Mills and, you know, other places then started to arrive in. But my first lists had to be dealt with mostly, you know, people that I was closest to right away, that I remembered that I wanted to do something with.
You had to be going through a lot of douchebags in that capacity.
Well,
and maybe a lot of real sweethearts.
Yeah. I think that I step away from a lot of people in the art world when they're too needy and the conversation is not really about our exchange or the exchange. Mm-hmm. It's more about them. And what they need to get for themselves all the time. Right. And that, to me, is not interesting. And a lot of people, you know, I mean, I don't mind saying this. I've said this out loud to classes. It's like, a lot of people think the art world is their big bad daddy. Like, somewhere inside of all of this, that they aren't getting something that they deserve, and they're not being recognized. And right. It's that thing out there that won't let me have it. And I always say, if the art world is your big bad daddy, then you need to go to therapy. End of story, you know? I mean, seriously, you just make your work and do what you need to be doing and engage yourself with the whole. Not that you have to be, you know, not everybody needs to be networking like constantly or do some kind of disingenuous conversation so they could have a show. It's not about that. It's more like, just engage what you're interested in. If you like a certain gallery, then go to it. Right. And pay attention. Talk to the person who runs it. Right. They want to be talked to. They don't want to just be asked for a show. Right. They want to know, you know, you need to know why you think you belong there. You want to know, you want to have a conversation about their programs. You want to understand what it is that, you know, then you find your way with what you're thinking about too, who you think you need to be with.
I didn't realize until recently that for all of your shows here, you bring in writers, people to work on a zine or a publication with you, mm-hmm, in response to the show, and that it doesn't have to, it's not, you know, straight ahead didactic text or descriptive text, that it can be kind of anything.
The writers are invited as artists in the show, and they're not invited as the traditional essayist, mm-hmm, which is not a bad thing. It's just not what I do here. They're invited to actually write a creative work, and they run the range of poets and prose narration and art writers and combinations of all of the above, you know. So to date, I have worked with now 50 writers, and every show I create, it's a newly commissioned work that they provide, and I design the work and the manuscript and print it here and make them for the shows, and they sell them with the shows. And the writer gets a stipend, and because they don't have anything to sell in the show, really, and so I give them an honoraria for the writing and then some gratis of the publication, mm-hmm. the edition. And they're usually between 75 and 100, and they're signed. And if the writer's in town, they can come and do a reading. And usually I can get about 35 people in the room on the floor for them to read. And they can choose a second reader that doesn't necessarily have to be with the show, or somebody they'd enjoy reading with. Or sometimes an artist is also a writer, like the last show, D.L. Alvarez read with Francis Richard. Yeah, it's been really a pleasure to do this and invite them. And I have to say, honestly, every manuscript I get, when I receive it, I sit at the computer and begin to read it. I read them out loud in the room so I can hear them. And then I usually end up crying because they're incredible what somebody has decided to do. And also some of the writers have said how the show, the people in the show, or something, just the essence of the show for them, created another way for them to approach their own writing. Like, for instance, when Glenn wrote the piece around Nea Bustamante, he was very, worried and nervous at first because he had been doing so much art writing that for him to break away from that. And it was really amazing because I kept saying, You write a lot of things on the side, Glenn, Just trust yourself. And he finally did, and he came back with this amazing letter where he writes to Nao in the future and talks about all her work, but talks to her as a friend. But it was just an epistolary style piece, and it was gorgeous. And it was amazing because he didn't expect it to come out of him.
Yeah.
And same with Frances. She's a scholarly poet. And she wrote this piece the last show. And it was all based on going to a studio visit with D.L. Alvarez. And it was unusual writing for her. She said, I never would have written a piece like that. I mean, even Brian Connolly, her partner, said, I've never seen her write this kind of work before. It was really fun.
What do you think makes for good art writing?
Oh, well, the good art writing for me is somebody like Kevin Killian, Eileen Miles, people like that who've written, Dennis Cooper, where everything's incorporated into the writing, that you've got to live the times you're living in. So to pinpoint a show and not reference in a open, in a circular way, let's say, or at least kind of talk through other moments that are, be it a political moment that may be happening when that show is up, just whatever we're living at the time, I think is some of the best art writing I've read, that people bring in pop culture and all of these, it's kind of like what is considered new narrativity here, gossip and pop culture, all of that combined with talking about a painting, bringing the painting in with a film that's out there. Mm-hmm. You could talk about Star Wars and this painting in here. You know what I mean? Something where you're really thinking about, I always think of Emile Zola, which is what those writings were like. They were chronicling what was happening in the moment. And I think those are really fun and exciting reads. When you're talking about art, I like the theory. I'm a theory junkie too. I like to read that stuff too a lot. But mostly, if somebody's going to write something about a show, I want to read something that's going to give it a volume.
Thank you. That was very specific.
I wanted you to talk about your own practice.
My practice is not as in the public right now because of the balancing act of doing this, having the space, but I never really was interested in being a careerist, so to speak. So I always like to saddle up with a lot of, I think that the space is also part of my practice profoundly. And also I'm an archivist at heart. I really collect and think about and keep track of a lot of things. But film is my biggest love, and actually it drove a lot of the work that I did with the choreography as well. Yeah, so now I'm working a lot with subtitles. I'm doing a lot of new work, and it's not really ready. I'm just kind of figuring out what I want to do with these subtitles, and I watch sometimes 2 films a day. That's kind of my diet during the every day, even doing everything else I do. I will maybe not go to bed until I've watched a film. I have to see them again and again, certain films. I'm very well versed in German and French film. Every once in a while, I'll watch some schlock thing just because I need to know what people are talking about out there. You know, just because people keep talking and buzzing. So I go, oh, maybe I'll watch this just to see what this is.
What movie have you seen the most?
Oh, good one. Oh, gosh. Well, this would be a hard one to answer, but I have a big thing for Hanna Shugula, who's in all the Fassbinder films, and one of my favorite films is Beware of a Holy Whore. And also The Virgin and the Whore. Some titles with whores in them, yeah. That's a French film, The Mother and the Whore is like a 3-hour film. I've also seen, like, I'm diehard. If there's a 7-hour, like, Satan Tango, when it played at Berkeley, there were like 30 of us at the Berkeley Art Museum at PFA. And Edith, who was running PFA at the time, she asked us if we wanted a break. And pretty much all of us wanted to sit through the 7-hour film without a break. We brought our food in. She gave us catalogs for such diehard action.
What happens in that? Is it like action, or
it's like you've lived in this village with these people for days on end, and it's a black and white film. There's one scene in the film that's very, very, very disturbing that has to do with animals, and she noted it before. She said, some of you may want to walk out, and actually I did. I walked out to the back for a second until they got over the scene and walked back in. I know what the scene is, and it just was too hard to watch. Yeah, a little kid is like torturing a cat. It's very difficult. Very, very difficult scene. But yeah, 7 hours. I've seen 4-hour films. I love marathons. I used to go for double features, or in the old days, they used to have 4 on a bill films. So I grew up in LA, and I hung out in Hollywood a lot. Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of old film as well, American film, but I have tended towards my very first films that I ever saw, and this is the honest truth. When I was a kid at 9 years old, in LA, they used to have this program called Theater 9, and they'd play the same foreign film for 1 week, every night at 9 p.m., Theater 9. So my parents would go to bed, and I'd sneak out of bed, and the very first films I ever saw, very first film I ever saw was Fellini's 8 and a Half, and I watched it every night for a week. I was fascinated with it. And then the second one was a British film called A Taste of Honey. And A Taste of Honey is with Rita Tushingham. And it's an interracial relationship where she's a young white British girl who gets pregnant by a black man. And, of course, it was, you know, the 60s. So it was not kosher. And there you go. I mean, these are the films I started out with in my lifetime.
Would you recommend this for elementary school children?
No, I wouldn't now. I don't know. I mean, it would just be, I think kids should watch good film. I think that parents have a responsibility to show their children some good films. But I don't know that some foreign films are the right films. I mean, I grew up in a very unusual Catholic Italian kind of Fellini-esque household. So for me,
your parents watching Fellini at home, though?
No. Just the way they behaved. I had a very unusual mother. Yeah. Who loved to dress like Gina Lola Brigida.
This is probably something you can't answer, but have you ever curated work into a show here that maybe you didn't really like, but you felt like it made sense or something. Like you felt like it had value, but it wasn't something that you personally, it didn't like set off the fire for you.
Yeah, I haven't so much here. I think I've said in my history here, there's been a couple of shows where maybe by the end of them, because being here with it so often, I get to really be with it, not in that 2 minute, whatever they give you, that statistic about how long people stand in front of work in galleries and in museums. And some, maybe there had been one or two at by the end, I wasn't sure what I was thinking about it anymore. So there was that. But I would say that in the past, at other spaces like Langton, I think that the difficult thing, and maybe you can really say something about this too, with being at Southern Exposure, sometimes in these nonprofits, you have to discuss a show for like 18 months. And then by the time it hits the floor, you don't like it anymore. You don't want to see it. You don't care about it. It's so over. It's so over.
Yeah. I mean, I still suffer in general with shows that I work on where I can't actually see them for what they are. I have like a really hard time having a fresh perspective. And I think it's because you're doing everything around, like all of the work around the show, not just working with the artist and talking about their ideas, but all of the little nitty gritty things that no one thinks about. And so it's so hard for me to get through what, you know. And so I hate that part of being like an arts administrator or working in arts organizations.
What makes good artwork?
Oh boy. Oh my God.
What kind of question is that?
Yeah, I'm not.
I try to figure it out. I don't know if I have an answer.
But let me hear what's your top sort of thought on that.
I don't know. I don't know if I know what's good or bad anymore. I feel like after doing this show and talking to people that have such a strong perspective on what's good and what's bad, I don't know anymore. Because I feel like if I hear someone talk about something that I hate and talk about how they love it and what's so great about it, I start to feel like, well, I can't be right to hate this.
I think one of the words that comes to mind, and I'll just say the word, and that's all. Maybe you'll just get it from that. I think clever. I think clever is for me, maybe, I don't want to say, you know, qualify bad, good, you know. I think it's more like annoying. Clever. Something that's like, I am art. I am art. You know, like really saying it's art and being very clever about being art. I think that to me, after a while, gets a little like, meh. It's a one shot. You know what I mean? It's just like a one trick pony. And then you don't think about it anymore. Yeah.
I understand that. I don't know if I can visualize exactly what that looks like, but I can understand that point of view.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you would like listeners to know?
What shall I let listeners know?
Come on by. Well, right? Wednesdays?
Yeah, come on by. Second floor, Wednesdays, 1 to 8. Sundays, noon to 5.
All right. Well, thank you so much for talking to us today. I feel invigorated, illuminated. I've got a new lease on life.
Good job.
Waking and dream life.
Ooh, the dream. Yes, I'm going to work on that.
And as always, congratulations.
Thank you. And congratulations to both of you. And I was told to connect.
From the bridge
to the other bridge
to the island in between.
This has been Congratulations, Pine Tree.